It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Hey, we're not making a lot of hullabaloo about it, but we have just started our spring member drive this year, your chance to support the service you rely on here on Wisconsin Public Radio. You can get things off to a great start. Make your gift right now. You can call 888-202-2552. That's 888-202-2552. Or take a few minutes online at WPR.org. And thank you. Now, there aren't a lot of opportunities to go out and do stuff right about now, and that means more time for at-home activities. For a lot of people, that means more time for reading. Maybe reading has even helped you feel more calm and relaxed for just a little bit. Our next guest is here to talk about how books can help us during a time like this and to make some recommendations. Anne Patchett joins us now. Anne is a best-selling author of several books. Her latest is The Dutch House. She's co-owner of Parnassus Books in Nashville, Tennessee. Anne, thanks so much for joining us today.
Really happy to talk to you.
I imagine you're a pretty big reader in any time, but what does reading mean for you right about now with a lot of difficulties, including, of course, changes at your own bookstore?
Well, yes. You know, it's funny because at first I had a hard time reading, which is just like not ever a problem for me. And I've talked to so many people who've said that, had a hard time concentrating, was really digging to look and find the right book. So that's part of it. And then, of course, I'm always reading for the bookstore. And like so many independent bookstores, we are still shipping. So we're not open to the public, but you can email in your orders, so find your local independent bookstore and keep them alive.
What did you do to find that right book for you for the right moment, maybe after that initial period of having a hard time keying in on something?
Well, my thing is I'm always reading books that haven't come out yet. I read galleys because everybody sends me 5 books every single day of my life. And I kept trying to read the way I always read, which is to be looking forward and reading things new. And what I realized is that there was a big part of me that just wanted to go backwards and read some things I'd already read before, read some things that were comforting to me. And once I did that, I really got my groove back.
Comfort reading. I love that. What stood out to you when it came to comfort reading?
Well, actually, the thing that I really desperately wanted to read was not so comforting. And that's Katherine Ann Porter's Pale Horse, Pale Rider, which is a novella. If you get any collection of Katherine Ann Porter, you'll find it. But it is the greatest pandemic story ever written, and it's about the Spanish flu in 1918. And it's something that I've read several times over the years. And, you know, it's tough, it's emotional. But weirdly, that was my breakthrough. And going back and reading that really helped. I also went back and read David Copperfield again, because nobody can resist David Copperfield. It just pulls you in. And no matter how much you don't have concentration, you're going to have a good time reading David Copperfield.
Now, you wrote a piece recently for the New York Times about why we need life-changing books right now. What do you mean by life-changing books?
Well, the piece that I wrote was about Kate DiCamillo, and that reading Kate DiCamillo was really life-changing for me. I don't have children, and I don't tend to read children's literature. I don't read middle grade books. And about a year and a half ago, I read all of Kate DiCamillo's books. I met her. People kept telling me how great she was, what a great writer she was. I knew that she had read all of my books, and I thought, I've just got to do this. And I was only going to read one or two, and I couldn't stop. And that was a great thing to think about right now, because if you don't have the bandwidth to read a full grown-up novel, read a middle grade novel. And I really, really recommend the novels of Kate DiCamillo, The Miraculous Journey of Edward Tulane, The Magician's Elephant, Tales of Despero. They're spectacular books, and you can have a complete reading experience in 2 hours. And she's really like the E.B. White of our time. She is as good as it gets.
Is there anything more fun, Anne, than finding a book you like by an author and then realizing there's a whole bunch of other stuff they wrote? Like you're set for, you know, months, years maybe with them?
It's the best. It is absolutely the best. And then there's the experience of having an author like that who you've been reading all along, and then their new book comes out and you think this is the best. So one of my favorite authors is Louise Erdrich, and she has a new book that came out last month called The Night Watchman. And it is, for my money, the very best Louise Erdrich book. So I think that Louise Erdrich is probably the best novelist, and now we have her best book. So that's incredibly exciting.
Ann Patchett is with us to share some great reads. She's written many books of her own. Her latest is The Dutch House, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Let us know what you're reading, what's on your list or your stack, or what you're borrowing back and forth with friends. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. You mentioned Pale Horse, Pale Rider. You had, I think, a blog post, or maybe it was on your bookstore site, with some other novels related to a disease and pandemic, if that's where people want to go right now. Not everybody will, but what are some other ones we might reach for?
Well, of course, everybody's talking about Station 11 by Emily St. John Mandel, which was, that was a fantastic pandemic novel. There's The Stand by Stephen King. If, you know, you've got time to read 1,000 pages right now. But I got to say, in my own experience, more and more, I want to find something that's going to make me feel a little better. And one book that I love, especially for Wisconsin, Jane Hamilton's The Excellent Lombards, which has got to be the great Wisconsin novel. So definitely your listeners should be looking for that. Writers and Lovers by Lily King. Just a very, very hopeful, engaging, one of those books you can't put down. Does your heart good? Those are the kinds of things that I'm looking for right now. I mean, I'm not saying... not saying necessarily everything is happy, but everything feels very normal. I just started Ann Tyler's new book, Redhead by the Side of the Road, last night. And I thought, yeah, you know, Ann Tyler, she knows what she's doing. You feel very taken care of when you're reading an Ann Tyler book. Not so much when you're reading a Stephen King book.
Fair. Yeah. Yeah, you feel kind of bad about things. Well, I guess when you read Stephen King, you always realize that things could always be worse than they
are. So much worse. Exactly.
Now, you mentioned,
what are you reading?
Oh, well, I've got a couple of things going. I just started, I'm late to the game. I'm always late on cool stuff. The Bone Season by Samantha Shannon. That's been good. I'm only a couple chapters into that so far.
Yeah.
I just read Phil Rickman. He has this series of mysteries set on the Welsh-English border with vicar, Mary Lee Watkins.
Those are fantastic. And boy, mysteries are a great thing to dive into right now. It's like, it's almost like working a jigsaw puzzle. You know, you're engaged and you're on edge and calm at the same time. That's a great suggestion.
That's a great analogy. We actually just talked to a couple of people about why jigsaw puzzles are so huge. Like, you can't buy them now. They're sold out. Our minds want something to latch out and solve. And I guess a mystery novel might scratch that same itch.
It's very true. And a lot of bookstores, including Parnassus Books in Nashville, we have amazing jigsaw puzzles. We just got in. It's almost like, you know, we bought up all the toilet paper. No, we bought up all the jigsaw puzzles.
Do you do jigsaw puzzles yourself, or do you have time with all the books you have to read?
You know, jigsaw puzzles to me are very social. So if I have other people around, I'd really enjoy a jigsaw puzzle. It's not something I'm going to sit down and do by myself.
We are talking to Ann Patchett, author of several books, including Bel Canto, and her most recent, which is called The Dutch House. She's co-owner of the bookstore Parnassus Books in Nashville, Tennessee. We're talking about reading, the comfort it can provide, ideas on what to read when we're stuck at home more than we're used to. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What have you found yourself reading recently, or maybe rereading? Have you shared something with someone? Have you dug into a big book that's been lying there staring at you for a long time? And you think, okay, well, yeah, let's give it a shot now. Or do you need a recommendation your own self? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation with Ann Patchett coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We pick up our conversation with best-selling author Ann Patchett. She co-owns Parnassus Books in Nashville, Tennessee. She's sharing some reading recommendations with us right now, and you can too at 800-642-1234. Are you reading more these days? What are you turning to? Some old favorites or trying something new? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go to your calls now. Josh starts us off in Madison. Josh, hello.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What do you got for us, Josh?
ever since high school, I read this book first in high school, and then after I got out of high school and college, I actually read it two more times, and that book is called The Odyssey, and I'm sure people are familiar with it, but it's a very good book, and it takes your mind off a lot of things, and there's several different stories in that book that are very interesting and kind of keeps you on the edge of your seat, and there's some humor in it, too. But currently I am a fourth-year plumbing apprentice for the state of Wisconsin. So the main book that I always, you know, have my nose in is that Wisconsin State Plumbing Code book. But when I have time to, you know, take a break from the lawyer gibberish of shall and shall not and stuff like that that's in the code book, The Odyssey is a good book to read. Also, Shiloh is an awesome book to read. And then a lot of people think this is funny, but I say – The Dictionary is a good book to read also.
Really?
Just because the power of words is so unbelievably, I can't even explain the power of words, how powerful words are. But to actually know the definition of words, and then when I see them, whether they're in the code book or they're on a sign or, you know, something else that I'm reading, I just, it clicks back and I remember, oh, I read that in the dictionary. I know what that word means. So
fantastic. Josh, thanks so much, Anne.
I love that. Okay, and I actually read the dictionary too. I'm all for that. But let me say something about The Odyssey. Two things. One, really fun to look at different translations. So, you know, reading one translation of The Odyssey is entirely different from reading another translation. But the book that I would really recommend is called Circe by Madeline Miller, which came out a couple of years ago. It was a huge hit, and it is a retelling of the Odyssey from the point of view of Circe, the witch, who is the one who turns Odysseus and his men into pigs. And it's a fantastic book.
Thank you so much for that call. I appreciate it. Great recommendations. We'll go to Nancy in Milwaukee now. Nancy, hi.
Hello. I heard your guest say that she felt she needed something at this time to pick her up. And what I'm going to say is not probably going to do that. but what I recently reread three of Marilyn French's books, which were written in the late 70s, maybe going into the 80s. And I feel there should be a necessity for every woman to read at this time, because it shows that concerning how long ago they were written, women's progress in life has not really improved much. And all of that was borne out by all of these recent sexual escapades by various men. I just feel what Marilyn had to say. She's been dead for a long time, but I really feel that what she had to say and her hopefulness about women's lives has not actually come to pass, certainly as fast as she would have desired.
Nancy, thanks a lot for that call. So some social commentary there, Anne.
Okay, and I certainly remember reading The Women's Room when it came out, and have been a big fan of Marilyn French, and I have a book that would be perfect for that caller. It's a first novel called Valentine by Elizabeth Wetmore, and it takes place in Texas in 1976. And it really is exactly what you're talking about, except in a novel. And it's a look back on how the situation both has and has not changed for women, and how women are judged and believed over time. Fantastic first novel, Valentine.
Nancy, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Talking to author Ann Patchett about great book recommendations for a time of safer at home orders around the country. Back to your calls now. Dale is on the line in River Falls. Dale, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Great, great topic. Say, I heard your comment earlier talking about The Stand, and that was actually going to be my first recommendation, but for a very different reason. In general, I've found my my mind going towards a different style of reading for the past probably 5-6 years or so. And it's less about going from cover to cover. It's really more about reading, like, history, for example, where you can jump in and you can read just a section at a time. And what I love about The Stand, actually, is, yes, it can seem like it's quite a tome and quite an undertaking, but because I've read it before, I can go back and remember that it is also a story about good triumphing over evil. So I found comfort in reading just even the human experience about how people were kind of relating with one another. But also the second thing that I mentioned was that I also find myself gravitating toward not only kind of comfort books that I've read before, but short stories, because I find that it's great, such as even picking up Khalil Gibran, for example, because being able to change a channel for even just 10 minutes or a half hour at a time, and talking about changing the channel, we also thought it was funny last night that we noticed that I've gravitated towards our rocking chair and pulling it out with my back to the TV, but that actually has been very calming for me as well. I mean, the actual physical act of turning off, you know, we were so just inundated with so much information right now, so...
Wow, a lot to work with there. Anne, where do you want to start?
I've got two great recommendations. One, I'm so glad you brought up short stories, and you're absolutely right. This is a perfect time for short stories. In the same way that it's a perfect time for middle grade novels, just things that are more manageable. My favorite book of short stories that's come out in ages is by Kevin Wilson, and it's called Baby, You're Gonna Be Mine. Brilliant, amazing collection of short stories. And also on the history front, I'm a big Doris Kearns Goodwin fan, and she came out with a book last year called Leadership in Turbulent Times, and it's about how five different presidents became leaders. It's Lincoln and FDR and Roosevelt, and Johnson, and I'm missing one. But anyway, it's exactly that. It's a book that you can pick up and you can skip around in, and it's just the highlights of the presidency and of the history in these different times. Fantastic book.
Thanks a lot for that call. We'll go now to, we got full phone lines, by the way. We could probably talk book recommendations all day. Pam joins us now in Fenimore. Pam, hi.
Hi there.
What did you want to bring up, Pam?
Well, when the idea of a lockdown became imminent, I went to the library and checked out the Jan Karen books, the Mitford series.
Mm-hmm.
And I am rereading them because I didn't want to read something that had a lot of strife or conflict in it. And I knew that, to me, these are comforting books. And I really enjoy, there's a little bit of religious overtone, which is fine. But I wonder if there are any other authors out there that have a similar style of writing to Jan Karen.
Ooh, I wasn't familiar with Jan Karen, Anne.
I am familiar with Jan Karen, and I am trying to think of who would be a good comparable for her. Because there's a real sweetness and a gentleness. You know, you might want to go back to the early novels of Anne Tyler. I think that would be really good. And this is so crazy. But whenever I think of Jan Karen, I think of one of my favorite authors, who is Nancy Mitford, who has, it's just the word Mitford, and people get them confused all the time. The Mitford novels and a woman whose last name is actually Mitford. But Love in a Cold Climate and In Pursuit of Love by Nancy Mitford, two of the most enjoyable novels ever. It's like reading Jane Austen, but a little more contemporary. They're a very little bit more contemporary. They're set in England between the Great World Wars.
Thanks for the call. Hope those recommendations help. We'll go to John now in Wyota. John, hi.
Hi. I just have a quick suggestion. If you would like something local, historical fiction would be August Derleth and the Sock Prairie series, Sock Prairie Saga. He's Wisconsin's most prolific writer, and these novels are written back in the 30s and 40s, and I think they're wonderful. There's probably 9 of them, and it's just great historical fiction, and I'd like to throw that out there.
And, John, I know August Derleth is known in part for his connection with H.P. Lovecraft horror-type stuff. This is not that. This is a whole other side of August Derleth, it sounds like.
Correct. This is historical fiction. It's not horror. It's not macabre. It's not poetry, which he wrote all of those things. And no, I really enjoy it. There's Bright Journey. There still is a summer night. There's Endless is the River. And there's several of them. The Edge
I
of
love
night.
That. John, thanks a lot. And I love that idea of finding some local historical fiction.
Absolutely. That is great. And that one is completely new to me. So I'm taking notes while I'm listening. I feel like I'm on a book game show.
It kind of, yeah. Have you read? And you've read a lot more than I have, obviously. So you're winning.
Well, you're
I give
doing
you more
a very
points
good
so
job.
Far. Well, and I wanted to talk a little bit about audiobooks. That's something I do.
Yeah.
No, I'm doing other stuff. I just got an installment of a N.K. Jemisin book, The 100,000 Kingdoms. I'm just about done with that on audiobook now. Is that something you reach for at all?
It is. I love audiobooks. I used to only listen to audiobooks if I was going on a long drive, which I think is how most of us think about it. Now, if I'm cooking dinner, if I'm cleaning the house, if I'm going for a walk, I'm listening to an audiobook. And not to be self-promoting, but I got to tell you, the best audiobook is The Dutch House, because Tom Hanks
Ooh.
Reads the audio of The Dutch House, and it is so spectacular. It just takes my breath away.
Not just because you wrote it.
Because of him. He's amazing.
And thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a lot of fun.
It's been a blast. Thanks so much, everybody. Keep reading.
That's Ann Patchett, best-selling author of several books, including her latest is called The Dutch House, with apparently audiobook read by the Tom Hanks. She's co-owner of Parnassus Books in Nashville, Tennessee. You can keep the conversations going over at the Ideas Network Facebook page. Share what you're reading right now. Well, if you're listening right now, you play a big role in funding the programs you're passionate about. We have a spring member drive going on. You can support these conversations. Make your gift at 888-202-2552 or pledge online, WPR.org. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We are in our spring member drive right now. Wisconsin Public Radio makes a difference in your day. It keeps you connected with news and culture from nearby and far away. Members make up the biggest share of Wisconsin Public Radio funding. Make a gift today for the programs you count on, programs like Central Time. You can give now at 888-202-2552. That's 888-202-2552 or WPR.org. I think you can obtain some socks while you're there. Check that out. Coming up, we'll learn how the COVID-19 pandemic and people needing to stay home has affected victims of domestic violence. Now, research led by UW-Madison has revealed some fascinating information about one of the world's tiny but mighty creatures, ants. A lot of ants are farmers, over 250 species, in fact, and in evolutionary terms, ants were very early adopters of farming. According to this new research, they figured out how to make the right partnerships to keep their crops thriving. Cameron Curry is the Ira L. Baldwin Professor of Bacteriology at UW-Madison. He was one of the lead researchers on this project, studying how ants created a relationship with bacteria to become successful fungus farmers. Cameron, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you, Ron.
Well, give us the time frame, first of all, of the particular ants you're looking at here.
So the ants we study are a tribe of ants that include, as you said, about 250 species that the estimate is that they evolved to do this fungus gardening and fungus growing about 50 to 65 million years ago.
Right. And people may be hearing this and not really thinking of ants as farmers, but they do a fair amount of different kinds of ant agriculture.
Yeah. In fact, our current available evidence suggests that they probably were the first farmers or some other groups of insects that will grow their own food. But these ants are one of the best examples of in nature of farming.
And this new research involves amber, right? Yeah. Ants caught in amber. Amber is this amazing thing. It seems like every few weeks we're finding cool information from the past trapped in amber. What are we looking at in this amber here?
So in terms of the study from the amber perspective, we got material for, that was captured from Dominican amber. These ants were embedded in the amber, estimated 15 to 20 million years ago. And what's really incredible about this is that we could see the microbial symbiont that we work on embedded within the amber. So what this means is that the ants were associating with this microbe 15 to 20 million years ago.
And talk about this relationship. Now, the ants are growing some kind of fungus, first of all.
Yes.
So what? Talk about the fungus and ant agriculture as it relates to them.
So the ants, you know, it's actually an incredibly fascinating and complex association. So the ants grow fungus for food, like we grow plants for our food. They cultivate.
Or we even grow mushrooms. We grow some fungus of our own, sure.
We do. And like human farmers, the ants have problems with agricultural diseases, so pests of their fungus garden. And this is another fungus that attacks and consumes the fungus the ants are culturing. And if this fungus grows, it can grow very rapidly and completely devastate the fungus garden of the ants. So the organism we were focused on is actually a fourth player in the system. So it's actually bacteria the ants use that produces antibiotics that helps protect the fungus from the pathogenic fungus.
And part of the interesting story is, if I have this right, the ants, if their body shape evolved to have little nooks and crannies for this helpful bacteria that helps stop this blight?
Yeah, so the major aspect of the study is kind of studying these structures. And these structures, in some ants, can be incredibly elaborate. And in one way of thinking about it is the ants can be completely outlined with crypts or cavities. So these are kind of embedded within the exoskeleton of the ant. And inside the cavity is where the bacteria grows. And so these structures change and have changed in incredible ways over the 50, 65 million years of this association.
So you've got like, I guess, a time scale over millions of years of how these ants change, their bodies actually change to be better carriers of this helpful bacteria?
Yeah, yeah. And if you're a researcher on ants, these changes are incredibly elaborate and fascinating, and there's many different varieties of changes in the structure. But what's really exciting for us is that the changes in the structure and the multiple origins of these structures indicate these ants have been using these bacteria for production antibiotics for tens of millions of years. And that's what's particularly exciting about our study.
Right. And this is this interesting study in evolution. And it didn't happen just once, you're saying.
Yeah. So originally, we've known about these antibiotic-producing bacteria for almost two decades now. And originally, it was thought it originated once in the association. It maybe originated, you know, relatively recently or maybe 10 million years ago. We weren't really sure. But what we show is that not only did it evolve at the very early origin of this association, was, you know, therefore indicating it's really critical, the success of the growing of the fungus garden by the ants, but that there's multiple origins of the structures that maintain it across the evolutionary history of the association. And that indicates that there's strong selection on the ants to protect their bacterial symbiont.
So the ants have this evolutionary pressure in effect. The better a carrier they are for this bacteria, the happier a home they provide, the more likely they are to have a successful fungus crop and then live.
Yeah.
What's in it for the bacteria? Do we know if the bacteria are evolving to be happier to be with these ants that bring them to the food they want?
Yes, that's a great question. So the bacteria are only known to be certain members of these bacteria are only known to be associated with the ants. So the ants provide the niche where these bacteria occur. So that's a major benefit. But the other benefit they receive from the ants is under these elaborate structures inside the ant are actual gland cells that are connected to these crypts and these cavities through little channels, and the ants through the glands are feeding the bacteria. So the nutrients for the bacteria are derived from the ants. So it's really ants cultivating and culturing bacteria with on and in their bodies to produce these antibiotics.
And the story I'm hearing here is evolution in some ways works more in more complicated ways than I learned it. You know, we learned the gazelle runs faster to get away with from the cheetah. The cheetah runs faster to catch up with the gazelle. Yeah. These are different species co-evolving together, sort of competing with yet a third and fourth species, the two different kinds of fungus.
Yeah, it's a whole community of organisms that, you know, play different roles. And one of the fascinating aspects of, you know, microbiology right now is the recognition of the importance of beneficial microbes and the complexities of communities. As you may know, there's a lot of research going on the human microbiome and the microbes on our skin and our mouths and our nose and in our guts, mediating human health. And so this is a really great system for understanding how hosts and beneficial microbes evolve.
So we might be interested as humans in studying things like how microbiomes can help us fight different kinds of disease, especially in the world of antibiotic resistance.
Yeah, and that's a major part of the research we do in the lab is thinking about understanding antibiotic resistance in this system, but also we look for new antibiotics from these bacteria in the ants. We've discovered a number of new compounds produced by these bacteria that have antimicrobial properties that we're exploring as new antimicrobial drug leads.
And maybe are there lessons here just briefly for agriculture? If they were fighting fungus, we're trying to fight some kinds of fungus.
Yeah, there's the potential for some of the compounds to be used, and there's also the potential to understand how the ants deal with resistance, and informing on our own attempts to grow crops.
Well, Cameron, thanks a lot for sharing your research with us today.
Thanks, Rob.
Cameron Curry is the Ira L. Baldwin Professor of Bacteriology at UW-Madison. He's been one of the lead researchers in the ongoing study of fungus farming ants and their evolution to be successful farmers. Coming up, we'll talk about a growing concern amid the COVID-19 outbreak, increases in cases of domestic violence. We'll talk to two advocates about stay-at-home orders and how they may increase the risk of domestic violence. Stay with us here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, there are a growing number of issues with last week's election, including ballots that were supposed to go to voters but never delivered. We'll take a closer look with WPR's State Capitol reporter. First, it's been a month since President Trump declared the novel coronavirus outbreak a national emergency. Since then, governors around the country and here in Wisconsin have issued various forms of shelter-in-place orders, which require many people to only leave their homes for specific errands. While these orders have been crucial in slowing the spread of COVID-19, they've also raised concerns about an increased risk of domestic violence. Our next guest joins us to talk about how COVID-19 has affected domestic violence rates and what resources are out there for people in Wisconsin. Barb Fisher is Executive Director of Advocates of Ozaukee in Saukville. Barb, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And Carmen Petrie is the CEO of Sojourner Family Peace Center in Milwaukee. Carmen, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me. Hi, Barb.
Hi, Carmen.
Barb, well, there are a number of reasons why domestic violence happens. How have you seen things going in this COVID-19 pandemic as people are having to stay at homes to be safe from this disease? What kind of things are you hearing?
Well, we're hearing a real increase in anxiety, that the anxiety that was out there before is even higher, that people are missing their support systems. A lot of women who have already left difficult situations of domestic violence and have built and rebuilt their support systems are now missing those support systems. So it's not even just the people who are living still with their abusers, but those who have already left who are still in difficult situations. So we're getting a lot of phone calls. We're making a lot of safety plans over the phone. We're finding a lot of people who are on the phone for a short period of time and then have to leave the phone because their abusers walk back into the room. It's a really dangerous time for people. It's a really difficult time for people.
And then, Carmen, what are you seeing in your part of the state in the Milwaukee area?
I would echo what Barb has said. We're getting increased calls from people who have anxiety Some of our clients are choosing to stay because they see no path forward out of the violence for themselves. They're seeking, like all of us, comfort of familiar, and so that's keeping them trapped in violent situations. So we produced a bulletin, a safety bulletin in the time of COVID-19 to help people sort of navigate the choices that they have to make. We've seen a slight increase in our calls from our police districts, and our referrals have gone up. So definitely violence continues to be happening at a high rate, and our fear is that it will continue to escalate. Like Barb, many of our clients that we work with in a case management or our Hope and Healing program are seeking that social support and connection because they're literally cut off from others. They can no longer attend support groups in person, those kinds of things. So we're encouraging people to know they're not alone, that it's not their fault, and to seek sanctuary with people they know, maybe a family member, a friend, and actually go to shelter if they feel like the violence is escalating.
Barb, Carmen mentioned the difficulty of someone maybe even making that call to a support service, given that the abuser might be there in the home even more often than usual. How are you and your clients trying to navigate that right now?
Well, I think what we've been trying to do is to let people know that they can reach out to us through email, they can reach out to us through text, they can reach out to us through their family and friends. If they can get a message to a friend to get a message to us, then we can give the message back to the friend to give back to them. We're trying to be as creative as we possibly can to try to get this out. I read something the other day that just really hit home to me, and it talked about the fact that abuse thrives in isolation and in silence.
Right.
Because it just gives that so much more power and so much more control to the abuser. And that's right. What we're really seeing here right now.
Carmen, right. I hear you nodding along. Can you talk about, and I guess this is true anytime, just more so now, the importance of being able to get through that feeling of isolation for the person who's currently experiencing this kind of abuse?
I think Barb is absolutely right. Under normal circumstances, victims are isolated, and abusers count on that isolation. So violence happens in isolation, and now, you know, it's a conflicting message. We're being told to stay home for our health. And home is not always a safe place for everyone. So our clients are more isolated than they normally would be. If you have work, for instance, before COVID-19, you could at least get a respite or a break and be around other people. You could go to church. You could be somewhat connected to other people. All of those avenues have been cut off, and we're worried about the increase in isolation for our clients because they're literally trapped with the person who is hurting them. And so what Barb said is true. Texting, calling, reach out to a friend, call our 24-hour hotlines, and find a way to reach out to someone, and we will work to get back to you in the best and safest way possible.
And Carmen, people might be thinking, well, maybe now is not the time to reach out. I see so many things being closed right now. Services not available. What's your message about the availability of these kind of services for people being victimized by abuse?
Well, I would say all of our domestic violence shelters that I'm aware of are open in the state. Sojourner is open. We're still accepting. I would let Barb speak for Ozaki as well, but I think we need to get the message that services are available. They're not available necessarily in the same way they were before. So, for instance, all of our restraining order services have been moved online and remote, and our shelter is operating, and our building on the corner of 6th and Walnut is open for walk-ins. So, Barb, are you accepting referrals like Sojourner?
Yes, we absolutely are. In fact, we just did a new Facebook post that said we're safe and we're open. I think this is one of the things that I'm really glad we're having this opportunity to have this conversation today, because throughout the state, I think people are afraid that we are under the assumption that we're not open. And as far as I know, all the shelters are open, and they are still providing services in some shape or form. It may not be exactly as what they did before COVID-19, but there are services available. Our shelter is open. We're accepting referrals. We're working with people. We're doing legal services. We're doing everything we did before. It may not be in the same format, but we're open, and we're anxious to help people.
We're talking to Barb Fisher, Executive Director of Advocates of Ozaukee and Saukville, and Carmen Petrie, CEO of Sojourner Family Peace Center in Milwaukee, looking at domestic violence and increased risk people are concerned about during safer at home orders during the COVID-19 outbreak. Carmen, for perpetrators, for potential perpetrators who don't want to walk through this, are there services out there where they can call and maybe get, I don't know, counseling or I don't know what's out there?
There are batterers treatment programs. For instance, in Milwaukee, people who are hurting others can call the Alma Center. Sojourner, we serve women who have used violence in their relationships. They certainly can call us. We're working remotely. Or they can call the Alma Center, A-L-M-A Center, and find out. And that's an important message. Not only do we need to say to victims, it's not your fault, there's help available, but we do need to say to people, if you're hurting others, there's help available for you as well.
And Barb, do you have something in your area that you would refer people to in that situation?
Actually, in Ozaukee County, there is not a batterers treatment program at this time. We are referring people to Milwaukee for that, to that same program.
Mm-hmm.
And, go ahead, Carmen.
So it's the almacenter.org. I'm glad that you asked that question because I think it's, you know, it's the other side of the equation. We don't believe that people want to be hurting others. They need help, and they need to reach out for assistance to change and stop their behavior.
Carmen, is there a one-stop place where people around the state can call for information to find, to get referrals to their local provider? Is there something anybody listening can turn to?
I think End Abuse of Wisconsin would be a great place to start on their website. They're connected to all of the programs in every county in the state of Wisconsin. There's also the National Domestic Violence Hotline that people could call and get referred back to local resources. There's also the National Coalition on Domestic Violence, I believe, has online referrals. Barb, are you aware of others?
The National Network to End Domestic Violence has a website that can connect you also, yes.
Now, Barb, we've talked about people being victimized by abuse. We talked a little bit about perpetrators or potential perpetrators. How about if somebody's in a position where they're worried about a loved one and they can't go and see them in person? Do you have advice for them on ways to reach out?
I guess you reach out in as many ways as you possibly can, and trying to text and to call and to provide the support that you can. To try to help to alleviate some of that anxiety and let them know that it's not a situation that's going to last forever, that there are still services available, that if they want to try to reach out, that we can try to find ways to help keep them safe. As I mentioned at the beginning, we're doing a lot of safety planning with people on the phone, people who don't want to leave right now, as Carmen said, because they don't see a path out right now, or they're afraid to come into shelter because they don't want to risk putting their kids with strangers at this time because they don't know what the health issues are and stuff. But that this is a short term. It may not seem that way, but it is a short term thing right now, and there is a path to be able to get out in the future. They just have to try to remain as safe as they can. And if it comes to a situation where they really do feel unsafe, they giving them an option of someplace to go to be able to get out if they need to.
Right. And Carmen, briefly, is there a resource we need in the state that we don't have right now?
I think we have great resources. I think, End Abuse has been a great organization, and we have great programs in each county in this state. I do think what Barb said, it is important for those of us for all of us to have connection during this time of unprecedented change and evolution. And I think the message to the community is you don't have to call the person and say, hey, I think you're being abused, but reach out and let somebody know that you love them, that you care about them. That can be an antidote to the fear and anxiety that started out this conversation. You can comfort someone and let them know, as Barb said, this won't last forever. I'm here. I see you. I want to help you. So I think we have great resources in the state. We have lots of wonderful advocates in programs across the state who are doing frontline work. I want to thank the governor for declaring us an essential service. And there are people in shelters all over the state that are showing up to work and helping during this pandemic. That's admirable to me.
That's where we'll leave it. Thanks to both of our guests for joining us today. Carmen Petrie, CEO of Sojourner Family Peace Center in Milwaukee, and Barb Fisher, Executive Director of Advocates of Ozaukee in Saukville. They joined us today to talk about the risk of domestic violence during COVID-19-related stay-at-home orders and resources around the state. If you're looking for a birthday idea for someone, how about a little inspiration from space? NASA, at their nasa.gov website, is sharing a unique opportunity to see an image from the Hubble telescope captured on your birthday. All you do is enter your birth date, just the month and day, no year required. The site will show you an image that the Hubble telescope found on that day sometime in the last few decades. It's all part of NASA's celebration marking the Hubble telescope's 30th year in orbit. So, say your birthday is today, April 13th, if I'm counting right. You get an image captured on this day in 2011 of the galaxy cluster Abel 2261. It is a beautiful image of a whole bunch of galaxies with a really big, shiny one in the middle. That one shiny galaxy is 10 times bigger than our own Milky Way. Now, my birthday gave me a more intimate view from back in 1996. A black and white image of a big chunk of the planet Jupiter and its moon Io, and you can actually see Io's shadow projected onto Jupiter, which I guess means that if you were on that spot in Jupiter and figured out a way to not die, you would see an eclipse, but not for very long. That shadow, I guess, moves really fast. What can you do with this? A, check out the cool images online, and two, if you need inspiration for a physical or electronic birthday message, pick a date, grab the image, and make that card. Space news you can use. This is Central Time.